The point is that there clearly is a value of A where that curve is minimum. It clearly exists. And at that value of A is 0, the value of that curve, E0, is some number, right? Okay, so it clearly exists. If you have calculus as a tool in your little toolkit of doing physics and stuff, you can actually calculate that number. So here's how you do it. So you first solve for A0. How do you do that? Take the derivative and find the turning point. Take the derivative and find where it's 0. Okay, so we've got a curve which looks like this. Okay, what we want to do is the slope. We want to find the slope of the curve at various points. And the point that we're interested in is this one. And the special property of this point is that the slope is 0. Okay, the tangent to the line is horizontal. So what we want to do is calculate the derivative, determine the derivative of that function of A, and set that equal to 0, and then solve for the value of A, which we'll call A0 here. Okay, so let's differentiate. Let's take the derivative of our function of A with respect to A, and we'll set that equal to 0. So what's the derivative of that?
It's linear.
This one's linear, yeah. What is the derivative of this? Okay, so Stefan showed us that the derivative d by dx of, say, x to the n is what? Okay, so what is the derivative with respect to a of a squared? 2 times what? 2 times a to the 2 minus 1 is 2 times a. What is the derivative with respect to a of 1 over a squared?
Minus 2 over a.
So 1 over a squared is the same thing as a to the minus 2. So our n is minus 2 here, so we get minus 2 x to the minus 2 minus 1. So it's minus 2 a to the negative 3, or 1 over a cubed. Okay? So let's use that over here. The derivative of that e there, first of all, there's just a constant out front, which is h squared over 32 pi squared, I think, m. Okay, the derivative of 1 over a squared, we figured that out to be negative 2 times 1 over a cubed plus half k a squared. The derivative of that of a squared is 2a, so it's a half k times 2 is just k. A. Okay, and I want to set that equal to 0. So now I have something 1 over a cubed plus something a equals 0. First of all, it should be obvious that there is a value of a for which that's true, because if I adjust the values of a, this is positive and this is negative. So I can adjust the values of a to make the magnitude of this term exactly equal to the magnitude of that term, in which case it cancels. So I'll leave it as an exercise for you to figure out. This is just some trivial algebra. What you get a, then you get the square of a0 is h over 4 pi square root of mk. Okay? So if we go back to our picture here, we now know what a0 is. How are we going to figure out what e0 is? Yeah?
I don't know if you can do this because it's like quantum and classical fashion or something like that, but considering that the minimum point of the total curve, the total energy curve, is the same as the intersection for the quantum curve and the classical curve, can we just like equate h squared over 32 blah blah over a squared, equate that to a half k a squared and find a zero from there?
That's a very good thought. So what you're saying is those two curves, the two white curves, look totally symmetrical.
Yeah.
About that a zero value. So why don't, instead of doing calculus, why don't we just do some algebra and just find the value of a for which this curve equals this curve.
Yeah.
So in this case, it turns out to actually work. And basically what it means is the zero point energy, half of it comes from kinetic and half of it comes from potential.
Mm-hmm.
exactly half and half. But in general, that's not the case. Suppose I had, say, that curve and that curve, and I added these guys up, then the minimum would be, well, I don't know. Minimum of this one is maybe whatever. It's, maybe it's not.
Oh, okay.
You know, maybe these are not symmetrical. Okay. But so in this case, in fact, it does work. You don't need calculus in this case. But in general, you would use calculus. But that's very good. In fact, that's how physicists think, because not all physicists are super ultra hyper mathematicians. And so lots of their stuff is kind of struggling, because they come across some mathematics that they don't understand, and so they're just trying to, so they try to fudge it. Okay? They try to like make as much progress as they can with the mathematics that you understand. And if they can't make the progress they need to, then they learn some mathematics. Okay, so so the value of A0 is this. Okay, so how do I determine E0? Plug it in. So I take that value of A0 and substitute it in for A here. Okay, so I'll let you do that. So E0 is, take that expression for E and substitute for A, put A equal to A0. Okay, and you work out some algebra and you get 1/4 HF plus 1/4 HF, where F, if you recall, is 1/2 pi square root of K over M. Okay, so in that expression you have a K, you have K's and M's here. There's an M, there's a K. In the expression for A0, you have K's and M's here. So at the end of the day, you're going to get expressions involving K's and M's. They always occur in this combination, root K divided by root M. Okay, if you work out all the numerical factors, it turns out to be 1/4 HF plus 1/4 HF. Okay, so this is, that would be a half HF. But I've written it separately to emphasize that, as I just said, half of that zero-point energy comes from the purely quantum mechanical kinetic, and half of it comes from the classical potential. Okay, which you might have been able to guess, because just the whole symmetry of the situation, remember we had these two bars. We had kinetic energy, potential energy, the total energy is conserved, and these guys just oscillate up and down. So nature really doesn't distinguish between kinetic and potential, it's just a form of energy. Okay, it just sloshes back and forth between two forms of energy, and everything is symmetric. And it turns out that the zero-point energy, half of it comes from kinetic, half of it potential. Okay, so what have we achieved? Well, we've identified we've actually calculated, just based upon common sense kind of reasoning, we've calculated actually, in the case of the ball and the bowl, the minimum value of energy is not zero. It's actually 1/2 HF. Okay. And what we didn't calculate is the spacing between the next levels, which is HF. Okay, but if you learn how to do Schrodinger's equation and all that stuff and solve those sorts of equations, you'll find that those are just HF. Okay, so what? Okay, so that's a particle or a ball in a bowl. Or the same thing applies to a mass stuck on the end of a spring. There will be some zero-point vibration, some zero-point motion, some energy associated with that. Okay, well, so what? Who cares? because in fact, in any real situation, let's say a mass and a spring or a ball and a bowl or whatever, we are so far away from that zero-point energy that it's totally irrelevant to us, right? Okay, well, so what I want to try and do now is show you that this zero-point energy has very, very practical consequences, like right in front of your face. Okay, so we're going to look at how this zero-point energy applies or has consequences for atoms. Okay, so the simplest atom is the hydrogen atom. So we'll look at that one. We understand the hydrogen atom, we understand all atoms, right? Okay, so what I'm going to do is just draw a comparison between the ball in the bowl and the hydrogen atom. Okay, so that the quantum stuff we learned about the ball in the bowl just now, we can just sort of transfer over to give us a quantum, or to give us some quantum insights into an electron in an atom. Okay, so the ball in the bowl, here's the bowl. like this, and this is the x-axis here, and that's 0. And the y-axis here was the vertical axis. We can also label that axis as the energy axis. Okay, because we know that the energy is proportional to the shape of the bowl, it's proportional to x squared. The energy is proportional to the height. Okay, so we'll just label that axis energy. And we will put in these energy levels that we just found. We found the lowest energy level right now. And that was, let's show this, that was E0. And it occurs when the amplitude of vibration back and forth is plus or minus A0. Okay? So when the particle is in that state, the system occupies this kind of size. This is the size of the quantum fuzziness. Okay? And then we also saw there are higher energy levels. And the spacing of all these higher energy levels is just HF, all E. Okay? So the ball in the bowl can basically be at this level, or at this level, or at this level, and so on, plastically. Okay, so that's that. Now let's compare this with the hydrogen atom. First of all, I should just write down here, the potential energy in this case is 1/2 kx². Okay, so that's that quadratic shape. For a hydrogen atom, so we've got some proton here, and we've got some electron, okay, and they're separated by distance r. What is the electrostatic potential energy? Okay, first of all, is it positive or negative?
It depends on the charge.
It's negative, it's attractive.
Yeah, it's attractive, so it's negative. Okay, so as these two particles come closer, they like to come closer together, which just corresponds to the energy being lower. Okay, so yeah, so it's negative, and it gets more negative as they come closer together. Okay, so it's negative. And there's some constant here. This k is not the same as that k. And it depends upon the two charges. If they both have the charge of the electron, this is plus the electron atom, whatever, plus or minus, right, E squared, divided by R. Or is it R squared? It's R. It's just R. Okay, so that's the potential energy. So let's draw that. So this is, R is just positive values here. And this is the energy E. The potential energy, a curve that looks like this, a curve that looks like minus 1 over r, first of all, it's always below the 0. Okay, and for large r, its value is what? As r goes to infinity, what is minus 1 over r? It's close to 0. Okay, so for large values of r, it's close to 0. But as r becomes smaller, minus 1 over r does what? Negative infinity. Okay, so it goes like that. So the curve looks like that. Okay, so instead of this curve, a quadratic going up, it's just this curve, a curve going down like that. Okay, but we can think of it as so as we increase r, it's just it's going up. In the same way, as we increase the size of the system here, it's going up. Okay, so they are very similar. Okay, and does anyone remember what the ground state energy of the hydrogen atom is?
-13.6
electron volts. So from chemistry, you might know that. Okay, so there's some definite value of energy down here. That's the ground state. Okay, and then there are excited states, just like there are excited states here. But these excited states are discrete. Okay, when the electron is bound to the, or when the electron is in the atom, it is bound. It is a bound particle. Okay, it's not like flying out freely to the moon. Okay, it's just sitting there around that nucleus. Okay, it's bound to the nucleus. So its spatial extent, whatever it's doing, some weird quantum motion or whatever, it's bound. It's a bound particle. As soon as we have a bound particle, we have a bound wave. A bound wave leads to reflections of waves and standing waves, and then only certain allowed standing waves, and that corresponds to discrete energy levels, discrete states. And so they look something like this. And then they get really, really closely spaced, infinitely closely spaced here, a continuum. Okay, close to approaching a continuum. What happens if the energy is bigger than zero? What does that mean?
They are separated.
They're separated. Okay, so if you give an electron, well, it's in its ground state here. If you give an electron some energy, if you give an electron 13.6 electron volts, it will jump up to this level, which means it has basically escaped. If you give it any more energy, it will escape with some velocity. Okay? And so now it's free. So up here, the particles are free. The electron is free. And it can have any energy. It's moving at any speed. Okay? But when it's bound, we have these standing waves because of reflections of waves and so on, and we get discrete energy levels. Okay, so that's that. Okay, so corresponding, so this is E0. This is the ground state energy of the hydrogen atom. And corresponding to that energy, the system has a certain size. The atom has a certain size. Okay, so just like here, corresponding to this energy here, E0, we just go on the potential energy curve and say, oh, well, that corresponds to a particle vibrating back and forth, basically, with this amplitude, A0. Okay, now same deal over here. Okay, so what this is saying is that basically the particle is ranging between R equals 0 and R equals this value. It's just doing some weird quantum thing in this space, roughly this size. And that size, what is this A0? What is this A0 called? The atomic, yeah. A famous guy to do with quantum.
Bohr,
the Bohr radius. Okay, the Bohr radius. So what that Bohr radius means is the atom, when it's in its ground state, the electron is doing some weird quantum fuzzy sort of thing, and you know 90% of the time it's within the Bohr radius, A0. Occasionally you might find the electron out here, but very unlikely. The bulk of the time is spent within roughly about this kind of radius. So we say that the size of this quantum fuzzy object is A0. And when it has that size, its energy is minus 13.6 eV. Yeah?
Wait, in the interval of the energy, it goes up by like half HF for the E level and then HF every other time. But it's a quadratic, so why does it do that? Why is it going up by a constant number?
So why doesn't it just start at zero? Why doesn't it jump to HF, then 2HF, then 3HF?
No, it's going to half HF, then it's going constant from there on in, right?
Yeah.
Why doesn't it go, like, say it starts, well, I guess it has to go to half HF because we just proved that.
Then right.
Why doesn't it quadratically increase?
So it quadratically increases in the case of the particle in the box. Oh. Right? We showed that the first one was E0, the next one was 4E0, then 9E0, and so on, right? That one goes quadratically.
Yeah.
But that means that, and that happens when the shape of the potential looks like that. If we change the shape of the potential, we will change the details of these quantum levels. And so if you solve Schrodinger's equation with this potential, you will get quadratic. If you solve it with a quadratic potential, you will get linear. I mean, why that's the case is just a property of, you just crank up the mass, and that's what it turns out to be. So I don't think there's any intuitive way to see exactly, at least it's not obvious to me that there's an intuitive way to see that. I guess maybe one thing to say is, this quadratic is the most important potential. Basically, everything is a harmonic oscillator. If I hit this table like this, it's oscillating harmonically. Provided the vibrations are small, everything is a harmonic oscillator. So there's harmonic oscillations, like that smooth sine wave kind of back and forth, that's present, that's ubiquitous, that's everywhere in the universe. Everything is doing that. Okay? If the amplitude of vibration gets larger, then it might not be that. You get nonlinear terms and so on. But basically, everything is a harmonic oscillator. Okay? And so this is the most important potential, and then it's the simplest, actually. You get these linear, it's just evenly spaced. Yeah?
This guy on the right side. So it means if I'm over this, my energy is higher than zero. And it means that the electron is no longer bound to the core, and therefore it can just
It can move freely, but that's not like a... Oh, wait, well, it is a plasma in the sense that suppose I had hydrogen atoms, neutral hydrogen atoms, and then I heated them up so that they have some random thermal motion. And then I have these neutral atoms like this, and they slam into each other because they have thermal energy, bang. That mechanical kinetic energy can be given to the electron and bounce it up to here. And then the electrons can fly out free. And so, yeah, then you'll end up, if you heat it up hot enough, you'll end up with a gas of protons and electrons, where they have too much energy to settle down, to be trapped, to be captured by any given nucleus, any given proton. So the proton just doesn't have enough, the attractive force isn't enough to hold it in. And then you have something called a plasma. So that's an electrically neutral gas of charged particles, like in the sun. Okay, so focusing here on this zero-point energy, the fact is that there is a minimum energy, and we're going to understand what that means. Okay, so let's think about that. So first, a little bit of history here. And again, I can't actually give you the dates, but some time ago, this guy called Rutherford did a very important experiment. Does anyone know what Rutherford did? Yeah.
He took like a piece of like gold metal or something and shoot like a beam of like a radiation alpha particle or something like that. And based on these results, he predicted that what the structure of an atom might look like.
Right. So let's suppose we have a foil of gold foil. Okay, and it's made up of atoms like this. Let's just say it's one layer thick. Okay, it's actually many layers thick. And what you do is you fire at these point particles, actually helium nuclei, okay, which are very, very tiny. So they didn't know that. They're just very, very tiny particles. Okay, so you have a beam of these guys, and they're flying here. And you're asking, what is the structure of an atom? Okay, so if you think that whatever an atom is, if you think it's some kind of stuff or whatever which fills sort of uniformly, you've got some, the atom has some mass, you know, is all that mass sort of uniformly distributed, and then it also has some electric charge, is that electric charge uniformly distributed, or you know, that sort of thing. Okay, actually the charges were thought to be point particles. So you had this plum pudding kind of model or whatever, so the idea that the electrons were like raisins inside this kind of like plum pudding thing, inside this a muffin, okay? It's a raisin muffin, okay? And so if you fire a particle at that raisin muffin, then what you'd expect to find is some sort of weak scattering like this, okay? What you would not expect to find is what they actually found was that what you would expect to find is that most of the particles just pass through, okay? Continue on to the right, okay? That's what you would expect. What you actually find is that some particles go straight back like this. Okay, and so to understand that required that the atom, I don't want to get into all of this stuff, but anyways, the atom can't have its matter sort of uniformly distributed like a muffin. All of that matter needs to be concentrated basically at a point. So it appears as if these essentially point particles are scattering off of heavy point particles. Okay, that was the upshot of it. Anyways, at the end of the day, after Rutherford had done those experiments, people thought about the nature of the atom, and sort of all of classical physics, all of the ideas, all of the structure, all of the way that physicists thought about the universe, how the universe works, and so on, together with Rutherford's results, ended up with people having the following picture of the atom. They said the atom, let's say the hydrogen atom, consists of a very dense core. Okay, 99.9999% of the mass of the atom is located basically at a point at the center, positively charged point at the center. And the electron is this point particle over here, and it is doing something. It is doing something. It is somehow bound to that heavy nucleus. They know that this guy is positively charged and this guy is negatively charged. And so they say, well, the only attractive force that could bind them is electrostatic. How does this force vary with distance? If this is distance r, if I double r, how does the strength of that force change? It goes to 1/4 of it. So the force is proportional to 1 over r squared. Okay? Is there another force in nature that's proportional to 1 over r squared? Gravity. Okay? So according to this picture here, you can say that this situation is exactly analogous to a heavy object like the sun with another object orbiting around it, with another object attracted with a 1 over r squared force. And so what does the Earth do? Well, it just orbits around like this. And so the model of the atom, this is sort of the best that physicists could do. The entire history of humanity behind it said, this is what an atom is. So there was a point in history where this is what an atom is, and that was the best people could do. Yeah. Yeah.
So the electron would lose the energy because it emits this energy as a light ray or some other kind of electromagnetic.
That's right. That's right. And that's the problem. Okay. So they got to this point over here, and they said exactly what you said. They said Newton tells us this 1 over r squared, tells us these orbits, et cetera, et cetera. Maxwell, so the two great geniuses of pre-Einstein physics, Newton and Maxwell, together, they tell you that this guy needs to radiate electromagnetic radiation. Because remember what I said, the source of all light is what? Moving charge? How is it moving? Accelerated charge. Okay, so a charge at rest is not going to do anything. A charge in uniform motion isn't going to radiate. You have to accelerate it. You have to change its direction of motion or change its speed. Okay, and then it will radiate electromagnetic waves. Well, this guy, although the speed is not changing if it's a circular orbit, it's definitely experiencing some acceleration toward the center. It's a centripetal acceleration. It's accelerating. It's going to emit electromagnetic radiation. Maxwell also showed us that electromagnetic radiation carries energy. Radio waves, light, all of those things carry energy. Okay? And so as this thing is orbiting around, it's going to be radiating energy. So you can't get something for nothing. Where does that energy come from? The electron's kinetic, well, and potential energy. The electron's total energy drops. If I have the Earth going around the Sun and I remove some of its energy, what's going to happen to its orbit? It's going to drop to a lower orbit. Okay? And a lower orbit. And a lower orbit. Okay? And in fact, it's going to do so smoothly, like continuously. So it's actually going to spiral in. Spiral in like that. Okay? And okay, so the key point is something like this. In a classical universe, the universe described by Newton and Maxwell, the situation emerges that Rutherford's model of the atom, we're going to have this radiation. Okay? And the key thing about classical is, let me sort of make a point of this. The thing about classical, so the logic is important here. So the thing about classical is smaller orbit, means lower energy. So as this electron goes around and around and around, the system is losing energy, so it must be dropping to smaller and smaller orbits. The point about classical is there is no limit to how small the orbit can become. That's important. So no limit on how small. Okay. So if we look at this picture of the potential energy here, there's no limit. So you can imagine the electron here, and then as it's radiating, it's basically rolling down this potential energy hill. And this potential energy hill goes all the way to minus infinity. So it's first in this orbit over here, the potential energy is this. Then it drops to a lower orbit, the potential energy is this. The energy is going down. As it drops to lower and lower orbits, okay, the energy keeps dropping lower and lower and lower. Okay? And the size of the system keeps shrinking, smaller and smaller and smaller. In a classical universe, there's no limit to how small that the system can become. The energy just keeps on going down. There is an infinite amount of energy available here to radiate. And the amount of energy that's radiated is going to just basically grow exponentially as you start this collapse of the atom. Okay, so all of the so the weight of all of classical physics up to that Rutherford point said that if what we understand about the universe is true, you know, if we were to suddenly have a switch that we could, you know, click it on and make it true, what would happen is in a split second, every atom in the universe would basically radiate a blinding flash of radiation, and all atoms would collapse into these little like inert lumps. And so, you know, in a blinding flash, everything changes. Well, it's not happening, so all of physics is wrong. Right? Something's seriously wrong here. Okay, so the kind of wrongness is bad. Okay, so I should also say there's an infinite amount of energy can be emitted. There's no limit. Okay. Whereas in the quantum world, we know this is very different. Okay, we know that there is this zero-point energy. Okay, so let's look at that. In the quantum world, we have a situation quite analogous to that one over there that we did with the ball and the bowl. And I'll just draw you the picture, sketch it out here. So what we've got is R like this. There is a classical potential energy term, analogous to the one that grows like 1 over A squared. Here, this one grows like, this is basically negative KE squared over A. Okay, A is basically the size of our system. Okay? If our system is of some size A, the potential energy will be this. So this is R equals A, basically. Okay? And if that was all there was to it, well, then the minimum value of the energy is minus infinity when the size of the atom is zero. Okay? In the quantum universe, however, the smaller you make something, remember that this electron is bound to that proton. Okay? It's not free to just go anywhere. It's bound. As soon as you have something bound, you have bound waves. You have standing waves. You have allowed energies, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And there's a minimum. Okay? And that minimum basically happens because particles are claustrophobic. Okay? So the smaller you try to make that system, the smaller you try to localize that system. See, as the system gets smaller, you become more and more certain of where the electron is. If the atom is really big, you'll say, well, I don't really know. I know it's somewhere in the atom, but I have like a huge uncertainty. As the atom gets smaller and smaller and smaller with its quantum fuzziness, I know the electron is somewhere in there. I don't know exactly where at any time, but I know it's in there. I'm making myself more and more certain of where it is. As soon as I do that, Heisenberg uncertainty tells me that there's greater uncertainty in momentum, and I get this kinetic energy term. So just like that kinetic energy term there, there is a kinetic energy term like this, which goes to infinity. Okay? I won't write down the mathematical details of it, but anyway, it's qualitatively the same. So if I take this curve now and add it to that curve, the total energy of the atom, if the atom is large, that total energy is basically the classical. Okay, but as I make it smaller and smaller and smaller, I enter the quantum regime, okay, where quantum effects become important, and this curve dominates. And so what it does is it looks like that. Okay, so instead of going simply down to minus infinity, zero size, the minimum occurs here at some value A0, the Bohr radius, and that minimum is the minimum, corresponding minimum energy is no longer minus infinity, but it's minus 13.6 eV. Okay, so it's that zero-point motion which is really, really important. So let me just jot down a couple notes, and then I think we're going to quit. So, I always lose those erasers.
One fell.
Oh, there it is. Okay. So let's suppose that we start with the electron in a high energy level over here. Okay, so somewhere up here. Remember, these are the energy levels. This is a very messy diagram now, but those are the energy levels. So we start in an excited state. So as photons are emitted, so we're starting with the atom in an excited state. It's going to drop down to lower states. Classically, that corresponds to dropping down to lower and lower orbits. Okay, so as photons, and in that process, it's going to emit photons. So as photons are emitted from it from an excited state, and that's and so classically, in dropping down and spiraling down to smaller orbits, we emit electromagnetic waves. Quantum mechanically, that corresponds to discrete jumps and discrete emissions of photons. Okay, so all of that's fine. So if we're way out here for a large atom, what's happening in the atom is analogous to what's happening over there. Okay, so as photons are emitted from that excited state, basically the atom gets smaller. Okay, and so it can get smaller and smaller and smaller, but then eventually when it gets small enough so the quantum effects become important, then we're on this curve over here, there is in fact a minimum. Okay, so, but there is a limit. There is a limit, and that limit is right here, A0. Okay, if it gets smaller than A0, instead of the energy going still down further and emitting more and more photons, it can't. The energy goes up again. Okay, so it can't get any smaller. So beyond which, energy goes up. Okay, so there's no energy to emit. Okay, so basically, at the end of the day, what we have is the statement that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which is a purely quantum mechanical effect, Heisenberg uncertainty principle stabilizes atoms. Okay, so Heisenberg uncertainty principle is necessary for atoms to even exist. So if the universe were not quantum mechanical, no atoms could exist. Okay? That's a pretty serious fact about our universe. And it comes from this Heisenberg uncertainty. It comes from that weird idea. I mean, when we're talking about the double slit here, right? We said, well, electron getting from there to there, well, it can take, basically, in the Copenhagen interpretation, it exists in all possible states. That kind of weirdness is associated with Heisenberg uncertainty, no classical trajectories and all that. All of that quantum weirdness is required for atoms to exist. Okay? So, in other words, an atom is not anything at all like this Bohr model. It's not anything that has any, that you can wrap your mind around classically. It's not anything like an electron orbiting around. It's a purely quantum mechanical, it's purely alien to the way that we think based upon our day-to-day experience. Our day-to-day experience says, you know, Earth going around the sun, electron going around the atom, that kind of stuff. That day-to-day understanding is completely wrong. It's not just a little bit wrong, it's totally wrong. The atom is completely alien to the way we think about our day-to-day world. It's really cool. These things rely fundamentally on the quantum nature of our universe. Okay, let's have